War Room, Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment, 20 November, Year of Our Lord 2019, Episode 38. We are live from the historic Breitbart Embassy down in the first floor that we've turned into a war room. We've got rapid response teams, surrogates, people booking people up on TV, everything in the first floor here. And this is our studio. We're live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, also nationwide on Salem Broadcasting. An honor to be part of AmericasVoice.news, the live stream that you can see us on the cameras today. Okay, it's game day today. We have Raheem Kassam from the United Kingdom, ran the war room for Nigel Farage and Brexit. Jason Miller, chief communication strategist for the Trump 2016 Come From Behind victory. And we're honored to be joined by Steve Cortez, one of the top communication strategists, a central part of the 2016 victory on the Hispanic Advisory Board, and a informal advisor to the president on communications. You're looking at our live podcast and live streaming on America's News. Please go to warroom.org. You can get all the updates. It's a website totally dedicated to the impeachment of Donald J. Trump. And where this show is going to stay up until the day after that President Trump is acquitted sometime in January by the United States Senate. I want to welcome Steve Cortez, Jason Miller. I feel like I'm in the green room. I feel like I'm in Cuomo's green room at CNN.
except right now Cuomo's outside with his
Cuomo's freezing.
His
and
hands
you
are cold. His hands are cold. He's like, you'd think it was like subarctic outside. I mean, it's like what, like 50
by the way,
degrees?
Can I tell a story about the green room at CNN? And this might get me in some trouble, but oh well. when I went to CNN the day after the election, and maybe you had similar experiences, Jason, when I went there after we won, you know, on almost no sleep, right? Overjoyed in Manhattan, of all places, which was unusual, right? Because we were in an area, you know, a physical locality that was anything but overjoyed.
Yeah, 10,000 people right? protesting.
But I went to CNN, and I will tell you, literally, tears were being shed. I mean, literally. I'm not exaggerating when I say that.
So the tears are being shed, but today they're outside. That's why Cuomo, who's doing the primetime, does his 10 o'clock show, is outside today because it's game day. Raheem, we actually got Sondland live. We've got the opening statement. We're going to cut into Raheem during this hour to give us updates. So I want Jason and Raheem to summarize. Sondland's statement is it's quite intriguing, is it not?
I would say so. Sondland's testimony leaked about 10 minutes ago. Press obviously going wild and everyone going through it just before he takes the stand here in the Capitol building. He's getting prepared to start delivering this opening statement now. But from what we can see so far, I've been through about the first five or six pages of this since it's been out. He seems to intend to try to implicate Rudy Giuliani, Mayor Giuliani, Secretary Pompeo, and the President of the United States, all while trying to...
The President or John Bolton, the National Security Advisor?
Well, he says he was following the President's orders. He said that Mr. Giuliani...
Okay, slow down here.
Yeah.
Let's give this
the opening bit, and he's just starting now as well. Okay. He says Mr. Giuliani's requests were a quid pro quo for arranging a White House visit from President Zelensky. Mr. Giuliani was expressing the desires of the President of the United States. That opening statement is live on our website now for people to check out as well at warroom.org.
Is he fingering or pointing towards three people who are not going to testify? Giuliani, Pompeo, and John Bolton.
Yeah, so let's take a super quick step back here. Remember, what we were saying yesterday is that Gordon Sondland is basically, he's a climber, he's a dilettante, he's going to look for the path of least resistance. He's worried about his business in Portland, his hotels. He's going to try to cover his own rear end. So he says in here, he tries to throw Rudy under the bus. Because he says right at the top that he didn't want to work with Rudy. The president said work with Perry, Volcker, and Rudy. None of them wanted to work with Rudy. This is what he's saying, but we did it anyways because it was the hand that we were dealt. He then tries to work it and say, I was working with official NSC staff and trying to keep them apprised. We did not think we were engaging in improper behavior, which I think is key. He does throw Rudy under the bus and say, Rudy's requests were a quid pro quo. But here is a very key point. This goes to its fifth point. Again, Raheem and I are scrambling through this.
Right, we're going, by the way, we're doing this live. We're on the we're on War Room Impeachment. But, the opening statement has just been given to us.
But here's the thing where he is about to get chopped up like one of those Ginsu knife commercials. He says, fifth, in July and August 2019, we learned that the White House had also suspended security aid to Ukraine. I was adamantly opposed to any suspension of aid. I mean, have you guys seen the clips of Gordon Sondland holding out the phone and trying this guy tries to demonstrate value?
Ambassador.
But here is, hold on, here is the sentence that, at least for the first five pages, is the biggest deal. I tried diligently to ask why the aid was suspended, but I never received a clear answer. And so, literally, so in the absence of any credible explanation for the suspension of aid, I later came to believe that the resumption of security aid would not occur until there was a public statement from Ukraine committing to an investigation.
Later came to believe. That's not saying that it's true. That's not saying that it was an affirmed statement that he was giving. He came to believe that. And he shared those concerns, he says, later on with Senator Ron Johnson. And he also shared his concerns with the Ukrainians.
Okay, but I think this is an important point.
Yeah.
We did not elect Gordon Sondland to be the president of the United States, right? We elected Donald Trump. And I keep hearing this again and again about, you know, he went through irregular channels, right? Or this was unusual, you know, all of these sort of terms. I think we and Team Trump need to embrace these terms, right? Of course it was irregular. You know, of course it was unusual. We were elected just to do that, to upset in the proper ways the foreign policy establishment of the United States, which, by the way, has led us to, here's the thing, too, we need to talk about, what has this wrought? You know, what has the foreign policy establishment of the United States given the people? Endless war, trillions of dollars of expenditures, thousands of lives lost, and I would argue, in many ways, a country that is not more secure, but actually less secure, the more we intervene abroad. America First was about a very different strategy,
To Cortez's point, I want to get here into the China thing and try to slip it in this first segment, but to Cortez's point, Sondland's not arguing that, though, is he? Isn't he arguing? He's trying to have it both ways.
He's trying to, yes, Gordon Sondland right now is trying to throw everyone under the bus, make himself look innocent. The fact that he's out there saying that, that literally.
But is he trying to throw the President of the United States on the bus? Is it stop at the Rudy Pompeo? Let me go to Raheem Kassam. I got a head shake.
It doesn't. Specifically talking about his trip to Ukraine for the Zelensky inauguration on May the 20th, he says, we were impressed by Zelensky's desire to promote a stronger relationship with the United States. We developed a very positive view of the new Ukraine government. He talks about that on and on. It's anti-corruption measures. And then goes on, unfortunately, President Trump was skeptical. President Trump directed us to talk with Rudy. We weren't happy with the president's directive to talk to Rudy. Nonetheless, on the president's direction, we were faced with a choice. We could abandon the efforts to schedule a White House phone call and the White House visit between Trump and Zelensky, which was unquestionably in our foreign policy interest, he says. All we could do is president had Trump had directed and talked with Rudy. So he's going after Trump.
Hang on a second. What does that mean?
I think right there he's trying to throw a little bit of a divide. He's clearly trying to make Rudy the bad guy. Yes. He knows. We've been saying this on War Room Impeachment, on the John Fredericks Radio Network, now Salem Nationally. We've been saying this for weeks, that the two folks most likely to get thrown under the bus are Gordon Sondland and Mayor Giuliani.
Yep.
What Gordon's doing is saying, you know what?
Preemptive throw under.
I'm going to try to throw Rudy under the bus before I get thrown under the bus. But here's the problem. There are so many people testifying and so many communications of him being literally the Mr. I want to hold things up hardo, and that's how I would describe him. I mean, this guy's just, I mean, he's literally the linchpin of it.
Right.
Now he's trying to say, nope, I'm just trying to work with NSC career officials and be the good guy.
But before we go to the break, I want to reset here. It looks like right now there's no immunity deal. He didn't cut an immunity deal. It looks like he's not going to take the fifth. We don't know that he gets into the testimony. But of anything you've seen in the opening statement, would give you anything that he's here to testify and answer all questions as we go into the day? Raheem, anything you've seen?
It seems like he's going to answer all questions. There are exhibits attached to his opening statement, WhatsApp messages, emails, and he also makes a point of mentioning later on in the testimony, we're just pulling this up now, so we'll develop this as the show goes on, but it looks like he's developing a narrative that he wasn't allowed to see any readouts from the alleged phone call that he had with President Trump from the restaurant. And he's saying that obviously I would like to see those documents and see the see anything that's been transcribed about them from within the White
There's
House.
There's no readout on things like that. Readouts are between heads of state. That's,
right.
That's,
yeah, they don't have readouts on just
no,
random
if you're
phone calls.
If you're calling right. somebody.
So I'll just read from you. Okay. Here he says, while I cannot remember the precise right. details, the White House has not allowed me to see any readouts.
Okay, let's any readouts, though, would be some of the calls with Zelensky. Let's get back into the hey, we're going to take a short commercial break. We're in War Room Impeachment, episode 38. It's game day. Ambassador Sondland, we've just got his opening statements. We're going to deconstruct that. We're going to get back to his live testimony. Raheem will be bringing in commentary and observations. We have Steve Cortez, CNN, and also a big contributor to the Trump organization as a strategist. Short commercial break. We'll be back on the John Fredericks Radio Network in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. Episode 38, Breitbart Embassy in the basement. We have a war room set up. Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller, honored guest Steve Cortez on assignment over here from CNN. We're up on the Salem Broadcast Network in America's Voice .news. We got Chris Cuomo shivering out there. Okay, we obviously have people blowing up our phones right now. Someone that's very smart, very wise says, I guess. Ambassador Sondland chose the spill your guts route. I want to go to Jason Miller. You're through this right now. Do you get that sense?
Remember that? What was that rap song in the 90s? It wasn't me. Remember, was that Akon or someone like that?
I mean, it's Shaggy.
Oh, it was Shaggy. I'm sorry. Thank you, Raheem, or Shaggy. But no, it's like it wasn't me. I mean, that's literally he's pointing to everybody out there saying that it was someone else had to do something. I haven't seen the direct attack on President Trump yet.
Right.
But I mean, he's going Rudy. He's saying that Hill and Vindman are different from the testimonies that he and others have. You know, there's one other key point here that we're talking about during the break. But I first communicated with Mr. Giuliani in early August. Mr. Giuliani emphasized that the president wanted a public statement from President Zelensky committing Ukraine to look into corruption issues, period. Mr. Giuliani specifically mentioned the 2016 election, including the DNC server and Burisma, as two topics of importance to the president.
Two topics, but overall, let's go back. That he said corruption. Corruption issues. Cortez, as a communication strategist, how do you think this plays? That's one of the central hearts.
Right.
Was the president overall interested in the people around him interested in stopping, you know, this potential arms sale with all this
right.
corruption and make sure it's cleaned up?
Steve, here's what I think is important. As a guy who has messaged for this president for now almost 4 years consistently, here's the central question. Was the information that he requested, was that information, would it be useful to the American people? Would it benefit the public? Okay, to me, that is the end of it. If it would be useful for the American people before we spend $400 billion of hard-earned taxpayer money know that there is corruption within Ukraine that is being investigated, you know, is that a useful question? Would that be beneficial to the taxpayer? If the answer is yes, then any side benefit to the campaign is incidental and immaterial in my view. I mean, I think that's important. And by the way, it's not just in my view. Look, if NPR released this poll yesterday, just yesterday, and said, can you imagine, this was the exact question.
And nobody, you should know, this is important because nobody's, there's a Morning Consult poll and the NPR poll, and the NPR poll's got a good polling partner. Nobody talked about it. And the reason is what you're about to say.
NPR said, can you imagine any information or circumstances during the impeachment inquiry, which might change your mind regarding your position on impeachment, only 30% said yes. Literally, America is busy working, making money, doing well. 30% only said that there's any information that could change their mind.
Raheem, along those lines, is there anything you're seeing right now in that is going to change people's minds? So is Sondland the throw everybody under the bus, or is it to throw Mike Pompeo, John Bolton, Rudy Giuliani, Vindman, all of them under the bus, but not the President of the United States?
There's a lot of Rudy Giuliani as you get further into this, especially regarding how Mr. Giuliani had been in communication with Ukrainians who were visiting in Washington, D.C. in July against what Ambassador Volker, Taylor, and Sondland wanted. You know, Sondland is seemingly trying to repurpose himself as somebody who's separate from all of these people and was the only smart one in the room who saw everything that was going on. He talks about
how he had value.
Doing it again. He's got a habit of this. When David Holmes came out and said that he was supposed to attend this.
David Holmes. But tell the audience who David Holmes is.
Yeah, David Holmes is the political counselor for the embassy of the embassy of the United States in Ukraine.
He's the eavesdropper.
He's the eavesdropper. He's right. The one who was sitting opposite Ambassador Sondland
on the terrace,
overheard the phone call between Sondland and Trump. Now, just before that alleged phone call, remember Zelensky's senior aide, Andriy Yermak, and Ambassador Sondland had a private meeting. Now, you'd think, especially given the focus that was on that, that Ambassador Sondland might have something to say about it. It's only two lines in the opening statement. He says, I met with Zelensky's senior aide, Andriy Yermak. I do not recall the specifics of our conversation, but I believe the issue of investigations was probably a part of the agenda. It's a pretty big meeting.
That's weak.
It's a pretty high-profile meeting.
Mm-hmm. That's weak.
It's weak from him. It shows that something, he's hiding something there.
Jason, did his lawyer go through that on that one? Probably. Don't really remember. It might have.
Yeah, and their thing too, Steve, this is really... there's a lot of just weird pablum in here that seeks to put attention on other people, but doesn't really tell you anything.
Take the spotlight off him.
So let me give you an example.
He's making him famous.
So there's a line in here. He's talking about, just as Raheem was touching on, the WhatsApp exchange and saying that Rudy was talking to Ukraine officials. Rudy was talking to reportedly corrupt Ukrainian prosecutor Lutsenko. But here's a line. Even as late as September 24th, Secretary Pompeo is directing Kurt Volker to speak with Rudy Giuliani, period. So think about that sentence. Again, even as late as September 24, Secretary Pompeo is directing Kurt Volker to speak with Rudy Giuliani. He's basically trying to put this attention onto, he's throwing Pompeo and Volker and Rudy under the bus here, but without actually saying anything. Does that make sense? Like he's basically just trying to throw out their names like, well, they were talking. Well, right. It's September 24th. Who cares if Secretary Pompeo said, Kurt Volker, go talk with Rudy, just as a standalone. So that's the kind of thing that someone's doing with this testimony here.
Right now, Ibrahim, I'll go back to you. It looks like, and Steve, jump in. It looks like, from this opening statement, someone could be here for 9 hours.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm saying they've got other guys scheduled. We were here to 9 o'clock last night, I think, mm-hmm. watching the testimony. People came in. It was, I think, cut off at 9. Right now, there's so much detail that you've got to deconstruct in this.
Yeah.
That you could literally keep this and go around and around and around if they really want to go to it. You agree?
If he was looking to be out of there early today, he's done the wrong thing in this opening statement. He is leading people down a path here, and there are so many questions that spring up as a result of some of the things he's saying. There's a lot that doesn't stack up, obviously, about how he was clearly, according to him in the opening part of his opening statement, clearly opposed to Mr. Giuliani being involved at all. That doesn't stack up with the way he had comported himself previously. He also basically admits that he didn't actually have anything to do with Giuliani until August. So what was the whole het up about from May anyway? So there are all these things that we're going to have to drill down into, and let's hope that especially the Republicans in the House are prepared to do that as well. There's one other thing that stuck out for me about this July 26th phone call with President Trump and Ambassador Sondland that the eavesdropper overheard.
This is from the terrace.
Terrace in Kiev that the eavesdropper overheard. He says, on July 26th, shortly after our Kiev meetings, I spoke by phone with President Trump. The White House, which has finally shared certain call dates and times with my attorneys, confirms this. The call lasted 5 minutes. I remember I was sat in Kiev. I have no reason to doubt that this conversation included the subject of investigations. Given Mr. Giuliani's demand that Zelensky make a public statement about investigations, I knew the topic of investigations was important to President Trump. We did not discuss any classified information. He goes on to say they did discuss ASAP Rocky, that rapper who was jailed in Sweden, and he would have been more surprised if President Trump had not mentioned the investigations, okay. Particularly what we were hearing.
We're going to get
Mr.
to
Giuliani.
Much more detail. It's game day. It's Ambassador Sondland. Looks like it's going to be a long and tough one. You're listening to War Room Impeachment, John Frederick Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting Nationwide, AmericasVoice.net, live streaming. Honored to be a part of their family. Steve Bannon, Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller, our special guest, Steve Cortez. We'll return in a moment to Ambassador Sondland.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, episode 38, live from the Breitbart Embassy basement, right across the street from the Supreme Court and across the plaza from the Capitol, where another historic day in the impeachment inquiry into the 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. This show will take place all the way until the day after he's acquitted by the United States Senate, sometime we believe in January of 2020. Want to welcome the John Frederick Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting, and AmericasVoice.news, where you can see it live streaming. Just go to your computer and plug onto the America's Voice guys. Honored to have Steve Cortez, one of the old war horses from the 16 campaign and from the 20 campaign. Also Raheem Kassam from UKIP and the Brexit movement, and Jason Miller. Let's go to Ambassador Sondland. It's game day for him. Talk about this. What does he say in his opening statement? By the way, the TV's in back. Is he seated yet? Or are they not?
Yeah,
started?
He's seated. He's going through his opening statement.
He's reading
right
the
now.
Opening statement. Okay. Talk about there's some interesting nuggets in there.
Yeah, and Raheem, interrupt if you find out as you're going through the Holmes testimony. But he's basically trying to cover his tracks as far as that July 26th phone call. This is the one that was on the terrace at the restaurant, where supposedly David Holmes, the assistant to Taylor, heard him talking very loudly. Said they were talking about investigations. And he says here, again, while I cannot remember the precise details, again, the White House has not allowed me to see any readouts of the call. First of all, there are not readouts of calls like that. Those mm-hmm. There just aren't.
That's so that ridiculous. Just, that's, and his lawyer, and his lawyer knew that.
They do.
That.
And that's really yeah. idiotic to
that's redonkulous.
Yeah. I said that the July 26th call did not strike me as significant. Actually would have been more surprised if Trump didn't mention investigations. However, I have no recollection of discussing Vice President Biden or his son on that call or after the call ended. Now, keep in mind, folks, here's why this matters. This is what we try to do is break down the details. The Adam Schiff and the rest of the Pelosi impeachment witch hunt machine, they have David Holmes, who was sitting next to Sondland while he was talking with the president, getting bits and pieces of a phone call, lined up to testify tomorrow on Thursday. So they're going to have Holmes come through. And again, if the Ginsu knives were done chopping up Gordon Sondland, to chop whatever is left of the chopping pieces all over the cutting board. So that's what they're going through. But it's very clearly here that Gordon Sondland is worried about lying to Congress and worried about going to jail.
Yeah, remember, the reason that Sondland is saying this about not mentioning the no mention of the Bidens is because in Holmes's testimony, he says that while he couldn't exactly hear, you know, the precise words, he understood that there was mention of investigations on the call. And then once the call was hung up,
this is key.
Holmes and Sondland are talking. And Sondland allegedly, according to Holmes' testimony, says the president only cares about big stuff like the Biden investigation.
Holmes directly testified that they had a conversation, which would be logical. They had a conversation about this right after they sat down. Now, if he's going to take the position that he doesn't remember, it didn't happen, you know, that'll be interesting. But this is where I do think you see, and I haven't had a chance to go through this, it seems to me he is devolving the issues here to Rudy, to Pompeo, to Bolton, away from him, but certainly not directly to the President of the United States. And that, to me, that's going to be central to this, is it not? Is there any other things in here where he, and when he says the president, one of the things that's most powerful back there, he says corruption issues, right? Which we've been talking about.
You want just a quick bit of analysis on this. I think he's hinting at, what I read out of this statement now, and I've gone through all of it, barring the exhibits tacked on the end, which are a couple of phone calls, a couple of emails. It seems to me that what he's trying to do is set it up to imply that Rudy Giuliani had pushed the president on this, and that the president really was concerned about corruption, but Rudy was more concerned about Biden. That's what it looks like Sondland's trying to imply.
Well, then in the situation of CNN and those places, are they have smiley faces right now, or they have tears?
You know, I neither so far, right? But my point is, it can be both. Like, we can be concerned about corruption in Ukraine, and if it happens to benefit the president and his campaign, so be it. I mean, that's, I guess, my, you know, sort of central point is, if the people benefit, if the American people benefit from him asking for an investigation into corruption, and if it happens to benefit the Trump 2020 effort, all the better. I mean, again, I don't think that it doesn't need to be binary.
So, Steve, I want to jump in because there's one key. Everyone in the media built today up is this is the smoking gun. Yep. This is where it's all going to fall apart. And he says here, very specifically, However, as I testified before, I was never able to obtain a clear answer regarding the specific reason for the hold, whether it was bureaucratic in nature, which often happens, or reflected some other concern. So he's saying, this is supposedly the guy who is going to provide the smoking gun. He says he has no idea.
I think that could be very powerful. How much of this is going to depend on his body language and how he stands up under, which is going to be a withering cross from both sides? Raheem, how do you think he's going to stand up under that?
I don't think Sondland stands up fares well today at all. It just looks to me like it's a little too convoluted. He's trying to be too clever.
We're going to cut too clever by half. Okay, War Room Impeachment, short commercial break. We'll return live on the John Frederick Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting, and AmericasVoice.news. In just a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room, Impeachment, live from the Breitbart Embassy in the basement where we have a war room set up. It's Kassam, Miller, Bannon, and today Cortez. Steve Cortez from the campaign and from CNN, one of the great communications specialists, along with Jason Miller, that worked with President Trump. Talking about communications, brother Kassam. Too clever by half is a great British term that I've been familiar with for decades when somebody's trying to be too cute. Is that what we have here in Ambassador Gordon Sondland?
It does appear so. Too clever by half basically means that you think you're more intelligent than you are.
Exactly.
Right?
And you think you're more intelligent than the audience that you're talking to.
Than the audience and the people that Ambassador Sondland is naming here in his testimony. Now, we've been through in the war room here this morning since the opening statement dropped, and Sondland is delivering that opening statement live right now. We've been through it all. We've now looked into all of the things that he's alleging and all of the clarifications he's making and all of the smoke he's throwing in this document. He originally starts in this whole thing by saying, look, there was a quid pro quo, but it was Rudy Giuliani whose quid pro quo it was. Then he says Mr. Giuliani was expressing the desires of the president, but then he goes on to say, well, the president was actually concerned about corruption, not necessarily any investigation into his
well, that's
political
all good. So far, so good.
Enemies. Well, not for Rudy. And then you go on and see all these weird details, and one of them that just...
You know, Rudy, Pompeo, Secretary Pompeo, and John Bolton are going to have to worry about their own business, right? This is about the issue. The central issue is the impeachment, the reversal of the 2016 right. election, the suppression of the deplorables movement, and the impeachment of a president of the United States and his removal from office. So, in that regard, is Sondland actually deliver something that takes the central thesis of what Nancy Pelosi and Cortez said in the very first segment? People don't care. Their wages are up, employment's going on, they're about their busy lines. He's from Chicago. He's from the city of broad shoulders. Look, El Robusto. He's the fighter. He's a good puncher. No.
Steve,
but is that the point? Does Sondland deliver on this?
It's about time we held the Democrats to the standards they've set themselves up here in this investigation. Guess what word never comes up in this testimony?
Bribery.
Guess what other word never comes up?
Extortion.
Guess what other word never comes up?
abuse of power.
None of it. So the answer to
Boom.
Your question is
Boom.
No.
So does Sondland deliver?
Well, one thing. He's going to personally be jammed up here. I don't see
your
point.
You guys' point, having done this in Cortez a number of times. You can't go all over the map here because you're about to get
right,
lit
because
up.
Because legal gravity will get you every single time. Now, there's one thing I want to just add to a point that Raheem said. When he said that there was a quid pro quo, or that Giuliani's requests were a quid pro quo, specifically that was about a White House visit for Zelensky. So when Gordon Sondland says a quid pro quo, it's about a visit, not about anything aid, which is supposedly
that is correct.
What this whole thing is about. But I want to go to Sondland. Here's another example of just him trying to be way too cute here.
Okay.
He says, as my other State Department colleagues have testified, this is on page 18 of his opening.
Colleagues.
Right. This security aid was critical to Ukraine's defense. It should not have been delayed. I'm using my dramatic
He's trying to
be the Daily, as Raheem taught us. I expressed this view to many during this period, but my goal at the time was to do what was necessary to get the aid released to break the logjam. So now Gordon Sondland's a hero.
And I think to that point, too,
Sondland is Murray Ivanovich now.
When we get in a policy disagreement, right? I mean, again, this is where so much of this testimony has centered on policy disagreement. You know what you should do? If you are a functionary of the executive branch, even a senior functionary, right? And you have policy disagreement that is this profound, you have an obligation to do this, to resign, and to use the political
and
process.
And also to express to, and also to express it publicly or go and express it. This is where I resign.
Right.
I want to go, hold it. This is the issue, though. You tried to throw it back on the Democrats. Bribery, extortion, abuse of power. He's not there to make conclusions. He's a witness of fact. Are the facts that he talks about lead you to a charge of bribery, lead you to a charge of extortion, lead you to a charge of abuse of power? They do not.
They are three hard no's.
Three hard no's.
There is nothing in here. Now, there are things in here.
I'm just saying the opening statement. Now, he's going to get cut up.
There are things in here that suggest things were done improperly and that WhatsApp messages were sent that shouldn't have been sent. I mean, even here, this one nugget, which I think is really telling about how this was all mixed up. Remember, Ambassador Sondland is the United States ambassador to the European Union.
Correct.
Not to Ukraine.
Yep.
Now, let me tell you this. He sends an email on July the 19th to Pompeo, Perry, McCormack, Perry's chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, Mulvaney's senior advisor, Robert Blair, and a lot of senior officials. He says, this is a quote from, I talked to Zelensky just now. Why is he talking to Zelensky in the first place? I talked to Zelensky just now. He is prepared to receive POTUS's call. We'll assure him that he intends to run a fully transparent investigation and will turn over every stone. He would greatly appreciate a call prior to Sunday so he can put out some media about a friendly and productive call prior to the Ukrainian election on Sunday. Why is the U.S. ambassador to the EU getting into it with President Zelensky about the Ukrainian snap parliamentary elections and what would help Zelensky in that? Sondland is showing himself to be way over his skis here.
But it's also showing you, remember, it's provocative for the Russians to have the ambassador to the EU of the United States even in the Ukraine as part of this, right? Because that's the whole Brussels, Ukraine, you know, make them part of the EU, make them part of NATO. That's how this whole thing started in the first place, right? So just having him involved is a policy decision. And that's why I think you say, hey, should he be directly involved? Just his presence shows that the apparatus, right? The apparatus has this inclination to go to the EU side.
It also shows, by the way, that one bit, sorry, Jason, to step on you there, but just that one bit shows, because remember, that was a July 19th email.
The snap election was on what day?
On the 21st.
We've got to get this timeline up, because it's going to be everything. Now we add this to the timeline.
Exactly. The call actually happened on July the 26th.
Because you're saying the president and whatever did not want to get that intrusive election.
I would like an answer as to why that call did not happen ahead of the parliamentary elections, and I would suggest it's probably because this administration didn't want to meddle in a foreign election.
Yeah, and this goes to our very point about Gordon Sondland over and over and over tries to involve himself in places where he didn't need to be, tries to overstate his influence and his connections with the president, and this is where this has all come crashing down. The house of cards for Gordon Sondland is he's largely an idiot, that he didn't have any influence, that he was one of a number of people that were helping to push for broader anti-corruption issues, and all of his puffery, all of his exaggerated stature is now coming crashing down. And look, he's really digging himself a hole here. I mean, he may be all the way to China by this point, because when they start crossing him up, you know, when you think of Schiff, you think of the killers that are up there, Jim Jordan, there's not going to be anything left of him.
Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break. You listen to War Room Impeachment, episode 38, John Frederick's Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting, America's Voice.news, Stephen K. Bannon, Steve Cortez, Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller. We'll take a short commercial break. We'll return for game day in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Frederick's Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment on the John Frederick Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting, America's News. America's Voice.news. Welcome to that family. And live stream, it's fantastic. Also on our podcast, you can go to iTunes, Stitcher, all the different platforms and just hit subscribe. It's free and leave a review. Okay, we've got a couple minutes here to summarize. I want to go to Cortez first. You've been involved in many game days. You've had the pressure where they introduce the president to go on CNN to do all this. Right now, the world is watching Gordon Sondland. How does he stand up today against Cross?
Well, we'll see. My guess is it's not going to go well for him. I think, you know, he's a self-promoter, clearly. Successful businessman. I mean, that's important. But he's a donor who I think is way over his skis right now. And once Jim Jordan starts questioning him, I think things are going to go very, very badly.
How do you think, Raheem, but Jim Jordan, what about, is a shift in the Democrats going to come at him hard today?
Yeah, I think this is the first witness who really gets it from both sides. And that's not going to end up well for him. Like we say, he's trying to be too clever in his opening statement. There's a lot of convoluted things here. He knows, and you can see it in his body language in his opening statement right now, he's very confident up there right now. But he also knows that if he doesn't come out balls to the wall on this, that he will be the one that's thrown under the bus. So he's trying to throw others under before him.
Jason Miller.
Yeah, I want to take a quick step back, and I've gotten a couple of text messages just in the middle of this podcast of people saying, you know, what's our message? What's our talking point? Here's the great thing about today reading this opening statement is there is nothing about Gordon Sondland's testimony that alleges any sort of extortion, bribery, quid pro quo, witness intimidation, anything.
And it sounds like the president's interested in corruption.
Right. And so when people talk about what's the takeaway, nothing today has fundamentally changed. Gordon Sondland's going to be in some trouble. I think both sides are going to go and chop him up. But here's the thing. The media is going to, because they have no choice but to go and make this sound like some smoking gun, because they have to justify what they've been talking about for weeks, if not months. But here's the thing. If you're a Trump supporter, nothing has changed. Nothing is going to change. And even tomorrow.
And by the way, Jason, that's a key point. We have to unmask the media. I wrote an article about this on Real Clear Politics. I encourage the listeners to read it, please. Unmask the media. They are the PR arm of the Democratic Party in impeachment. And really, that is critical to acknowledge.
You think that they've become really the opposition party in this sense?
100%, Steve. Listen, there is no journalism left, really, unfortunately, or very little left anymore. And what mainstream media is doing, they are acting as the PR machine for the Democratic Party, particularly when it comes to impeachment. Unmask the media, I think, is one of the three key talking points for us.
Raheem, any summary comments before we get into the people who watch your life?
Well, actually, if you don't mind, I wanted to just read one of the comments. We got so many great comments on the reviews on the podcast. So I wanted to just, I'm just going to pick one at random. I mean, really, I'm going to pick one at random here. So it could be anything. Great podcast, very insightful. Just a few thoughts. Dems are outsourcing lightly. The right within here, that's gobbledygook. Probably the best podcast I've listened to in a long time. These guys get right to the point without light chatter and wasting fluff. I appreciate their conservative views and find their political insights fascinating.
I hate light chatter. Okay, summary, you got 15 seconds.
Yeah, media is going to paint this as terrible. They're going to come back tomorrow, use David Holmes' testimony to try to make it sound like everything from today was some horrible, terrible thing for President Trump. No need for Republicans to change their message. Keep hammering, but you have to stay on Sondland.
War Room Impeachment. We're going to be back at 5 o'clock today. War Room Impeachment on the John Frederick Radio Network.